Melech compares mitzvah to the power of a candle, a torch. Of course, has limited illumination. And Teva is compared to the powerful light of the sun, light of day. The Gemara gives a mashal. I understand this pasuk, the difference between the power of mitzvah and the power of Teva, which is really a formula for life for a Ben Teva and his mishpacha. The Gemara gives a mashal of a man who's walking choshech v'afela, walking in utter darkness. And in the darkness, he's afraid of a number of things. There are dangers that loom. First of all, there are kitzim. There are thorns which can cut his feet as he walks along, cause great damage. There are also chasim. There are open pits, holes he can fall into. Chas v'shalom. Up to injury or death. And there's barkonim. Those are sword-like plants that stick out from the side of the road. And by not being able to see where they are, he can be hurt or killed. So, those are some things that he's afraid of, but not all. He's also got the danger of listing the highest voice. Bandits lying in ambush, attacking, and wild animals that can prey upon him. And on top of all of that, any day is a devil. He doesn't know if he's even going on the right road. That's going to bring him closer to his destination, or take him further away. As he walks along, he fortunately enough to find an avuka. Comes across a torch. Now he's got light. And he's no longer afraid of thorns, holes in the ground, sword-like plants sticking out from the side of the road, because he can see his way. He's got the light of the torch. But still afraid of bandits, wild animals. And then comes sunrise. The world is flooded with light. The bandits go back to their lairs. Wild animals back to their dens. And he's saved from all the dangers that he's faced so far, except that he still doesn't know if he's on the right road. Finally, he comes to Poshes Drochim, he comes to a crossroads where he can recognize already certain signs that can point him in the direction of his destination. Then he's safe from everything. That's the mashal that the Gemara gives him. The avuka is, that's the ner mitzvah. And Torah is the oil of Yayin. Explaining this Gemara, the Marsha starts off by saying, man is made up of Guf and Neshama. Guf is his physical facilities, physical faculties, that he's able to do mitzvahs with. The Neshama, that's the, calls it the intellectual part of man. That's what he uses for learning, for thinking, for analyzing. Now, with that breakdown, he goes to explain what is it that man faces in life. First of all, there are physical dangers. There are a lot of physical dangers that we face. Dangers of gufni, of gashmi, But they can all, really, all of them can be broken down into three broad categories. What are they? We said in Ashkivenu just a little while ago, Dever, Cherev, Verov. That's it. All of human challenges can be broken down into those three categories. Start with Rav. Rav is man's struggle for economic survival. Even with all of the advances that have been made in the world, there's still millions of people either starving or on the verge of starvation. And even in developed countries, as we know from our own situation here, people struggling for survival below the poverty line, it's an economic struggle. That's called chorov, the struggle against famine, against hunger. Then there is devil. Devil literally means a plague. It means the sudden death that comes, Rahman al-Islam, from illness. We might add to it traffic deaths. Like the pit that a person falls into without any kind of warning. That's what Deva represents. Another thing that man struggles to overcome disease, try to overcome the tragedies of traffic casualties. Finally, even if we succeed in overcoming the economic challenge and the challenge of health, there's a danger of terror and war always looming over us. Here we see it on a day-to-day basis, unfortunately, but the whole world is faced by that. Threat, Iran becoming a nuclear power, an earlier generation, the threat of the evil empire, Russia, with its missiles pointed towards the United States, towards NATO. So there's, on top of Devler and Rav, there's Cherev. And if it isn't war, it's terror, which has become so much a part of the life of mankind. Now these three things, Devler, Cherev, and Rav, are all symbolized by those dangers that Moshe tells us we face. What do we say he faces? The danger of koitzim. What is koitzim? Where do we find koitzim the first time in the Torah? After the Chet of Adam Rishon, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, koitz bedalta. You're going to have to struggle because of the tikkun for the Chet of Adam Rishon. Man is going to forever have to struggle until the time of Mashiach. Struggle against the thorns, all the impediments there are for man to be able to draw sustenance from the earth. Koitzim. Man walking in darkness means man in this world. This is a world of darkness. The world of light is one that's after 120 years. In the darkness that man walks in this world, he's first of all afraid of Kreitz. He's got to contend with the struggle for survival. And then there's the open pits, the holes. What do they represent? Sudden death comes. Illness, death that comes from accidents. And even when all of that is done, you have the third thing, the sword-like plants sticking out from the side of the road. They represent the sword. In the old days it was the sword, today it's the suicide bomber, nuclear missile, chemical warfare, all the trappings of war and of terrorism. Devil, Cherev, Verov. All the physical challenges to man's existence in this world. Now how does he contend with them? Rabbi Yishai gave us mitzvahs. Mitzvahs we do with our body, we do with our physical self. Whether we're putting on tefillin, or whether we're davening, we're doing chasadim, we're doing them with our guf. By doing mitzvahs with our guf, that's like taking that torch and trying to banish all of these dangers of devachei avolot. That's our protection against the physical dangers, the physical mitzvahs that we do. Mitzvahs with the guf is our shmira against the dangers that threaten our guf. But are we safe? We may be safe physically if we have all that going for us. We've achieved economic prosperity. We've overcome the threat of illness, sudden death. We've even achieved peace and security. But we're still faced by other kind of dangers. Not physical ones, but spiritual, intellectual ones. What are they? They're represented by, says the Maharsha, by the list of Bechayis Lois. List of Bechayis Lois refer to the two great influences on man in a spiritual sense. Number one, the Yetzer Hara. He's got drives. He's got passions. He's got temptations. And there's the environment. The society, the community in which he lives, that tries to draw him away from his responsibilities to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're represented by the Chayes voice. That's the wild animal within me. The animalistic drives that I have that are so hard to control. And the listim, the bandits, they're those evil influences, whether it's radio, television, internet, you name it. In every generation, it may change its form, but it's always there. The listim, the bad influence. Now, those are intellectual challenges, spiritual challenges. They're not physical ones. They're threats to the neshama. It's not enough to do mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are tremendous powers. The power of the torch, of the candle, their mitzvah. You can't contend with spiritual dangers with physical mitzvahs. That's where Torah comes into picture. Torah is oil. Torah is intellectual. Torah is spiritual. Torah gives us the ability to be able to overcome those animalistic drives within us, and gives us also the ability to stand up against all of the temptations from the evil influence of societies that we're in. I always think about our generation as being the one that has probably the greatest nisayon in history in that realm of listening. Chayis Rois, temptations there always have been. That's the story of man from the beginning of time. But the power of communication, a world in which advertisers spend billions and billions of dollars to convince you to buy things you don't need, and use the most vulgar ways of appealing to your basest drives. And wherever you go, billboards, wherever you listen to, radio, it's hard to escape. It's a world in which there's a tremendous amount of brainwashing that's being done by those listed. And the only power we have against that is Torah. You know, mother once came to me in yeshiva, should sound familiar to you, complaining that, what did you do to my son? You brainwashed him. I've heard that before. I told her an answer which she repeated many times since then, saying, madam, here in the yeshiva, we don't wash brains, we dry clean. And I went on to explain to her that this is not a question of our introducing ideas. We first have to dry clean all the filth and all the corruption that the mind has been poisoned with by those listed out there. So, that's the formula. Torah, its power of intellect, not only does it give us that spiritual koyach to control our taivis, as the Chazal is saying, we're all familiar with that. Barosi Yesod,
power,
there's only one antidote to the wild animal within us, that chayavo. That's tavlin of Torah. And as far as the other danger, why is it that people are so misled by all of the advertising and by all of the trying, a world trying to sell us false values? Because we don't discern between the emes and the shekel. Torah gives that power to be able to overcome all of that propaganda that's being directed at our minds and our hearts. Now let's get to the final aspect of that Moshe. So we have what mitzvah does, we have what Torah does, Ne'er mitzvah, Torah oyer. And yet that fellow, after he's already come into daylight and he's safe from all of the things, from the thorns and from the barchanim, the sword on the side of the road, from pits, he's safe from wild animals, safe from bandits, but he does know where he's going. Finally he comes to the crossroads. And then he's safe from everything. Ask the Gemara, what is the meaning of the crossroads? You've already told us what the torch is, it's mitzvah. You've told us what the daylight is, it's Torah. What is the meaning of crossroads? The number of tehutzim that are given in the Gemara, I want to share one of them with you. Because Rav Nachman says, Zeh Talmid Chochem V'yom HaMisim. What does that mean? This is a mashal. The crossroads means that a person has to have not only learning, not only to be a Talmid Chacham, but to know that he can't rest on his laurels until the day of his death. That there's got to be a steady growing, at least a steady guarding, because the danger is always there. So that means basically what Chazal tell us in Pirkei Avos, that al tamim biyatzmecho ad yoy meisecho. Don't trust yourself until the end. Because no matter that you've done the mitzvah, and no matter that you've learned the Torah, you haven't eliminated all those dangers. Because it's not impossible that every minute we're going to be learning in every situation. We have other things that distract us in life. What about the time when we're not totally immersed in learning? We're in danger. So, the crossroads, what it's really telling us is, keep on going. Don't stop. In terms of our own situation here, in Eretz Yisrael, and I say we, in terms of those who have made the courageous move of leaving the land in which they grew up, have come to settle in a Torah community in Eretz Yisrael. I think there's something more to be learned from that idea of the crossroads. And that's what I'd like to share with you tonight. The Chazal that the Mashal quotes as being the understanding of Talmud Chacham that has to be on his guard until Yom HaMisa, that Chazal says that what don't trust yourself at Yom Yisrael, know that you always have to be on guard. There's another part of that statement by Hillel, Perek Sheni and others, says, Al tamim v'yatzmuch ad Yom Yisrael, al tithmoish min hatzibur. Says that the Pelos Yisrael, each one of these is an important piece of advice, but they go together. You know why you can't be al tithmoish min hatzibur, why it's so important to be part of a strong tzibur? Because that's your guarantee that you're going to keep on safe and you're going to the destination you want to reach. Because you can't trust yourself. Because you need the support of those around you, of your community, that's why our kifle shminat simul, because you can't trust yourself, ad yoy meisef. My experience here, we came to Eretz Yisrael some 41 years ago, and like everyone else comes to Eretz Yisrael, there's a lot of what they call chevle klita, absorption pains. Yeah? Chevle klita, you know, it reminds me, I was a very young child, I was 4 years old, when my family was fortunate enough to leave Europe about a year and a half before the war. Came with parents, brothers, who didn't know a word of English. And we were part of what was called then the Greenhorn Generation. Those who were veterans already in America who had come before used to laugh at the newcomers, Greeners, they called them. Greenhorns. It was the greatest disgrace to be a Greenhorn. That's why we hurried up to learn English quickly and tried whatever we could do to become real solid Americans. It's difficult. A very difficult thing, a very difficult period to adjust to a country, to a language, to a culture that you weren't born and raised in. And we felt that very much when we came here. And it's because of that kind of a feeling of the helplessness that the Sefer Chinuch writes in the mitzvah of Ahavtem es Ager, even though literally Ahavtem es Ager means a non-Jew who has joined our ranks, and he's in a difficult position, and you got to show him special love and special concern. Says the Sefer Achino, you got to learn from this that every Jew who's in a place that he did not grow up in, and this is where his family was not from, and he's a stranger here, then you have to show a special consideration from the V'haftan Sagir for him too. That's the way we felt back in the States. That gave us, and it came again when we came here. But we made a very important decision. And it's an outlook that I'd like to pass on, if not completely, at least in some measure. The desire to assimilate into the society. An American was to become an American. Whether good or bad, I don't know. But it was a necessity of life. Here, we came to Eretz Yisrael to become better Jews. To grow in our ruchnius. And we made a decision that the only way we can do it is by becoming an integral part of the community in which we lived. I want to point out why this is so important. If we live in a generation in which there are so many influences, so many negative influences, so many chayos and listed, do you know what we have going for us? How can you be machanach a child today? Is the home strong enough to stand up against all the influences? I wish it were, but it isn't. So we rely in great measure on the batei chinuch, on the chatorim and the beis yankims, seminaries, the yeshivas, we rely on them to do a lot of the job that's our responsibility as parents. But even that is not enough. And yet, Baruch Hashem and Eretz Yisrael, we have such a strong Torah community. Beautiful Torah community. You know what the secret of success is? The tzibur. The community, the kehillah. When a youngster feels, or a parent feels that they're part of that, and they have all the strength, and not only the strength, but the pride. I remember years ago, what was the Yeshiva Bochum, whether it was the United States or even here in Eretz Yisrael? He was a buckler, he was ashamed. Back in Europe, it was hard for a yeshiva bochum to even find a shidduch because he's still a bankvetcher, a guy sitting there useless, he's not going to have a panosa. Today a Ben Yeshiva is a prince. He looks with pride upon himself. He looks down on the secular world. What does that mean? Nothing. Where did that esprit de corps, where did that pride come from? That's the koyach of a tzibur. But you pay a price to become part of a tzibur. Because we as chutznikim, most of us Americans, we have some different ideas about how to dress, different ideas of how to use leisure time, how to relax. And sometimes they come into conflict with the communities that we're in. The most dangerous thing that you can do is to say to your child, we're different. We dress different. We read different things. We listen to different music. All of those being different makes it impossible for our families to become a part of the tzibur, which is our greatest fortification, our greatest strength. How many times have I heard chutznik parents saying, but why can't I have the same? It was back in America when they had maybe yeshivas and they have secular studies. What's wrong with having secular studies here too? This is how it's different. Your community is different. Why can't we play baseball, basketball like we did over there? Why is it looked down, frowned upon in yeshivas? This is Eretz Yisrael, where soccer is played on Shabbos and sports is associated with the Haloni world. Why can't we dress the way it was dressed over there? It covers all the parts of the body and it was accepted there. This is Eretz Yisrael, it's different. We're in Eretz Yisrael because Eretz Yisrael is a holier place. And if the community that we're in has set those standards, we have to put aside our own individualities and our own objections to it and become part of the tzibur. Becoming part of that tzibur makes us that much stronger. We draw from the strength of the tzibur. Al tamin be'atzmo, don't believe in yourself that you can do it alone. Al yirei me'isecha, you can't. With all that you've grown, and we're talking about Hashem to a tzibur that's grown so much, and tell you that you can't trust yourself alone. You need the tzibur. And if it means concessions to the standards of the tzibur that you don't understand, you got to go along with it. Perhaps that's another meaning in the idea of the crossroads. Stranger at the crossroads. Stranger at the crossroads we encounter in this parasha that we just read this morning. Jews found murdered on the Canaan of the city after bringing an Egla Rufa, and they have to wash their hands and say, Yadeinu lo shafu es adam hazeh. We're not guilty of bloodshed. As she brings the words of Chazal, Chisala al daitcho, can anybody possibly think that this Canaan are guilty of murder? What's the answer? That no, of course they're not guilty of murder. Not in a positive sense, but they're accomplices. Because if they didn't give him enough to eat and drink and escort, then it's as if they were guilty of exposing him to a murder. That's why the Canaan have to say, Yodeinu l'shef ha'sevim, we did our job. We provided with food, we provided with drink, we provided with escort. Because what can happen if the community and the individual don't blend together in that kind of help? One getting help from the other, looking for help from the other, and the other providing it. What happens? It's a very interesting nakuda there. One of the things they have to say is that we gave him food. And if he didn't give him food, did he die of starvation? The guy was murdered. What's the significance of whether they gave him food or not? Okay. Say balabatish. Like Foshim said, if the baby were given him food, he'd have enough koyach to resist the reitzeach. But Rashi didn't say that. Rashi said this, says, you know what? The idea of being given food? Because it may be the scenario was that because you didn't give him food, the first guy he saw coming with food, he was so desperate that he attacked him. He tried to get the food from him. and the guy overreacted and murdered him. Maybe the lesson in that person who's without food, without escort, without being a part of a community, a stranger, can reach desperate situations. And just as the responsibility of the community to see that he never reaches a desperate situation, that he attacks and becomes murdered, just as they have the responsibility to provide him with the food and the drink, and even with escort, it's the responsibility of the individual to look for that kind of help as well. A guy walks into a city and doesn't bother to ask the city to provide him with those things. He doesn't want to take advantage of what a community has to offer him. And he's guilty of suicide. So these are the nekudas that are so crucial in our lives. And I don't mean to make light of the challenges that there are. I know what it means, and I've lived it through. I perhaps took a very extreme approach to it. We made it a rule in our house that we didn't even speak English with our children. Sacrificing the fact that they won't be able to speak with their grandparents? No. We took that decision that they should, even in language and culture, totally become assimilated in the country. I don't say that everyone has to do that. Perhaps an extreme approach. But beyond language, in every other aspect, if a school says, this is what we expect you to do in terms of dress, maybe uncomfortable, it's not what you're used to. That's what you thought the standard was, you have to go along with it. School says no internet, no computer. The school gives rules. If the community has rules, as much as it's difficult for us perhaps to understand them, but when you're an Eretz Yisrael, you have to buy the entire package. It's a package deal. I know as well as you, I can list all of the shortcomings there are of our society. But you have to, in life, deal with the bottom line. Take all the pluses and the minuses and put them together, add them up, and you come out ahead. That's why we're here. So, this is a nekuda that's so important in the idea of the adjusting and of accepting the standards of our community. I want to share with you an interesting story, a very touching one, that has to do with this, with an example of some of the things that we've been exposed to lately. In the idea of communal life, there was this whole tool about sheitlach, yeah? India, yes, it is. No. Noshim sheiros, noshim shitkaniyos, many of them before anything getting cleared up. Next day, they took off the sheitlach, put on a tefillin meanwhile. A teacher, a Haredi teacher, a woman, teaching in a mamlachti dati school. Fourth grade, Lachti Dati school, also teaching there. She comes in the day after the proclamations came out in the Sibu. She comes into school. Instead of her usual sheitel, she's got tichel. And the kids looked up at her. They caught it right away. Something strange over here. Mora, what's going on, Mora? What's doing? So she says, well, the Rabbanim came out with a psak that until things become clear, then we're the shame. So, you know, these kids are not growing up in Beis Yaakov, in Yeshiva, in Chador. They're kids from a modern Orthodox kind of place. And if the Rabbanim say, so what? So that's why he had to take off the week. So she starts explaining. What does it mean? You have to listen to a Rav. What does Das Teira? She gave a whole talk about that, how important it is to have that kind of obedience to the Rabbanim and to Das Teira, and that's why she did what she did. She finishes her talk as a little girl, fourth grade, who suddenly pulls off her wig and exposes her bald head to the entire class. Nobody knew until then that she was without hair.
and that she's wearing a wig. And she didn't know the difference, married, not married. Laura said, that's what the community, and that's what the Rabbani asked me, so she took off her. I cite that as an extreme example, but what it means that that kid, a little kid, how old could a kid be in fourth grade, 9 years old? And she heard an explanation. I'm not explaining that. You know, you got to be part of a tzibur that there's leadership, there's authority, and there's rabbanim, and there's das teira. That's it. So if it means that suddenly everybody's going to laugh at her, yeah, she's bald, it doesn't matter. So lesson, extreme one, but one in which puts into focus the kind of accommodations, the kind of concessions that we have to be able to make in so many aspects of our life. And we're faced by this. I know that I lived it through. I've lived it through not only for myself, I've lived it through with so many Talmidim, so many that are here, living through what all of the nisyonis that there are, the challenges that there are from our families. For our families that don't know yet to do and appreciate and put pressure and have different ideas than we have about the chinuch of our children, the pressures that come from relatives, that come from friends, and our own discomfort in having to totally give up culture that we're so used to, so familiar with, so comfortable with. But it's all worth it. It's all necessary. Because that's what the crossroads is also all about. You come to a crossroads, that fellow in the marshal, he has one difficulty in the crossroads, he's doing it all alone. He has to go find his way completely on his own. And that's why he's never sure until he reaches the end of his life that he's going on the right derech. We're fortunate in the fact that we have a tzibur that has set a standard for us. 40 million French, we can't be wrong. Tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of Bnei Torah can't be wrong either. This knowing that we're going in the right derech, and that's a tremendous problem. All through life, there's this question, are you going in the right derech? Where are you headed? When you're in a tzibur like this, whether it's Kiryat Sefer, whether it's Yerushalayim, whether it's Beit Shemesh, wherever it is, but as Torah communities, you know, you have Rabbanim, Talmidei Chachamim, you have a tzibur of Avreichim, you have a tzibur that's going on a derech. You're not alone at that crossroads. But you got to take advantage of that koyach and to make every effort for yourself, for your children, to become an integral part of it. And it's not only going along with the crowd, but even taking an initiative to do something. There's so much initiative that being done today, so many initiatives of chesed. I know I have a daughter here in Kiryat Sefer, not far away from here. And there's a gemach that she has, and there's a gemach of the neighbor next door. There's gemachim and gemachim Baruch Hashem. Every gemach that somebody does, every initiative of chesed that you do, brings you into a greater contact with the community. You become a contributor to the community, not only one who takes from the community. It's also a very choshev aspect of getting the koyach of that tzibur so that we know that we're going in the right direction. We could go on for a long time. It's a short night, and I'm sure that there may be some questions that perhaps we have another few minutes that maybe people want to ask, because the arrangement I made with the taxi that's here is that he's already getting probably impatient. The time is running out. So I'll just close my part of it with a bracha, the Miskredish Elo, where we're all so taken up with Chesma Nefesh, Chodesh Rachman Vaslichois. That's a time for us to give a little deeper thought to the aspects of what we can do in the community. And one of the things, by the way, if Torah is the thing that helps us, the light of Torah that makes it possible for us to resist all of those temptations of banded within and the influences without. We have to be mechazik ourselves in Torah as well. And Torah and Atzibur, something like a shiur tonight, I understand to be plans for future shiur, and very, very chashuv inyan. The chizuk that comes, even if you don't hear anything new, but just the chizuk of coming together as a tzibur and listening and divrei Torah and divrei chizuk is something also which makes that light of day a lot brighter and a lot more powerful. So I want to thank those who contact me, if I am Hodges and Rosh Lifshitz, who, and certainly the host who gave us the use of his home, for taking this initiative and giving me the schus of perhaps being the first one to start a series like this. I give you my bracha that you should be able to continue on, because every meeting, every talk like this is making that light of day that much brighter, and it's making it safer to go on from the crossroads to reach safely the destination we all want to reach.
The Hebrew to your children.
Yeah.
I see that the children whose parents spoke to them in Hebrew have a much easier time integrating. And certainly even if they don't stand out as American Israelis,
right,
they're
right, right.
American. But the two reasons which I need to hear something stick Monet is, one is my Hebrew, I can't say I'm a sad man.
I want to tell you something.
Right now.
Let me answer on that, okay? Excuse me a moment. The hardest job I had here in Eretz Yisrael was learning Hebrew. I knew English very well, and I was not a man for languages. The most Hebrew I learned was talking to my kids, because a child will not hesitate to correct you, and you don't care if he does. That's the difference. You're very comfortable to be corrected by a child, so what? Grandparents.
Right, the grandparents are going to be out. Okay, but
that's a trade-off.
Sacrifice, right?
It's a trade-off.
But
it's not necessarily bad.
The other thing is that by speaking to them in Hebrew, it could be that a person would lose maybe some of the yachas that they would have when they're speaking their mother tongue. You feel like you get right to their leg. You want to explain something to them. There's something that are said which are beyond the words. And the mother tongue, but could that still, even if you're struggling with Hebrew, is it trying to still, the mother could get across to her sons that yachas that they would otherwise have in their mother tongue? Is that a shikul, that aspect?
They're all shikul. I don't mean that. I'm telling you, it's a question, and all of the things here you're dealing with, you have to make your calculation. This versus that. Everybody, that's why I say I don't force it on anyone on that. We made that calculation. I don't say that everybody is capable of doing it. Everybody should do it. But it's a trade-off. Yes.
Taking that point, but Simcha Wasserman talked about that point.
Yeah.
And he held very strongly you should speak in your native tongue.
Native tongue.
Because they only have one parent.
I've never gone on a crusade about everybody has to speak English to it. But there is something that's on. You have to make your calculation of what it is. Yes?
How do you choose your chibur?
Do you choose your chibur where you live?
You did already.
You're stuck. That's what you do. That's a good point. First of all, you have to find, when you're looking where to live, you have to be very careful in finding the right place. But once you're there, forget it. That's it. What? That I don't know. Yeah, you already have. The place that you're living in. I mean, how big a place? I mean, like even big Kiryat Sefer. It's still here.
But there's the tzibur of your yeshiva, the tzibur of your community, there's the tzibur of the people you live with in your shuluna. I mean, everything you have to. All fronts.
But they pretty much, I mean, look, they're not, the standards aren't different to those. So I'm talking about at Sibur in terms of the standards that they set for themselves. What's acceptable, what's not acceptable. I don't think there's a much of a clash between the Yeshivish at Sibur and the, or any Yeshivish at Sibur that's over here.
Right.
Okay, I might say you'll excuse me.